Welcome back to Techonomics. I am your host, Jason Middleton. The battle against sexism in Silicon Valley is well documented, and it's a frequent topic on this show and will continue to be. In this segment, we look at yet another topic that dogs Silicon Valley culture, ageism. As the baby boomer generation ages and consolidates its wealth, the financial tech sector may well be missing out on a market worth trillions of dollars. So, why doesn't someone address this market opportunity? Could it be the average age of a tech CEO is about 38 years old? We talk with a wealth management expert to dig into an underserved demographic.
George Snicchetti, wealth advisor at Morgan Stanley in Walnut Creek, California.
George, you've been on the show a lot, but we haven't talked about this one particular topic, and that is ageism in Silicon Valley. You're a Silicon Valley veteran.
Many startups in Silicon Valley over the years.
Right, and you're also a financial analyst, of course.
With Morgan Stanley, correct.
Right, and you have an essay out on the interwebs that we're going to put up on Facebook.com/Techonomics Radio.
Right.
About ageism, and in your voice, tell me your lead and how you got there.
Well, I really wasn't aware of it as large of a problem with our baby boomers, but Morgan Stanley put out an investor poll, Pulse survey, and the results of the survey were interesting. It surveyed about 1,000 high net worth individuals, most of them in the baby boomer demographic, 55 to 70. And what the survey found out is that identity theft was the number one concern amongst high net worth individuals.
Okay.
This concern ranked higher, much higher than terrorism. And you would think that terrorism would be the first thing.
Sure.
But it's not. It's cybersecurity.
You would think that because terrorism geopolitical events are going to ripple through their markets.
Exactly.
And let's go ahead and define high net worth individual real quick.
Yeah. Okay. Those are individuals that have a minimum of $100,000 in liquid assets on up to well over $1 million.
Not counting your house.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Liquid assets.
Sure. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So we went identity theft and then number two was terrorism?
That's correct.
Okay. What can we tease out from that? I mean, is it because they have so much to protect?
Yeah, it really caused me pause when I saw that because the survey also showed that even though this ranked the highest concern of high net worth individuals of that group, only about 20% use any kind of protection against cybersecurity.
Okay.
And they have millions and millions of dollars worth of assets.
Uh-huh.
The baby boomers are really the wealthiest demographic in the United States.
Sure, sure.
So that caused me some concern. You know, why is this true? Why is there a concern? And why hasn't Silicon Valley done something about this?
Well, George, there are apps and apps and apps everywhere. I mean, financial tech is an entire sector all unto itself, just like biotech.
That's correct. There's tons of apps out there, but our baby boomer group tends not to be as computer literate as the younger people. And what I found was I went back and I looked at the top 20 financial tech firms in Silicon Valley. And what I found was is that the average age of the CEO is 39.1 years old.
I did not know that.
And the average age of the programmer is 30. So when you're in your 30s, what are you thinking about? You're thinking about things that 30-year-olds do.
Sure.
And that's where your business focus is. But yet we're kind of ignoring this very large demographic of about 80 million baby boomers who have most of the wealth in the United States.
So how can we tease this out? Is the onus on the high net worth individual to seek out these protections and these apps and this financial technology that exists? Or is it on Silicon Valley to help market it to the right audience and the 80 million boomers you're talking about?
Well, we rely on Silicon Valley to come up with these innovations. I mean, think about it. We have artificial intelligence. We're on the cusp of launching that. We have drones that are on the cusp of becoming, you know, huge inside the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to have self-driving cars soon.
Uh-huh.
So,
all by the end of the decade.
Yeah. So why can't we develop protection technologies for seniors, for older people to help to protect their wealth?
Right.
I don't think the focus is there.
The focus is there on the business side, not on the consumer side.
That's correct.
So if I can boil it down, and forgive me if I'm wrong and correct me, but there's a market opportunity here that Silicon Valley's passing up.
Exactly. We have trillions of dollars
mm-hmm.
that Silicon Valley could be going after. And because the focus is on a younger demographic, we're just not seeing the applications that are applicable to the high net worth individuals to help protect them against identity theft.
Uh-huh.
To help protect them against their funds being stolen.
What about managing funds? What about financial tech apps for that? I mean, wouldn't that be dovetailed together?
Exactly. But we still haven't found artificial intelligence to really help very complex financial issues to be solved. And that's why the financial advisor, the one-on-one help is extremely important. But for those individuals that have lower liquid assets, smaller accounts, the robo-advisor and artificial intelligence that started to develop can be helpful.
I see. Okay. Well, there is a lot of growth in this industry, the fintech sub-industry, if you will.
Right.
Fintech.
Yeah.
But at the same time, protection is paramount. You know, I'm thinking about like the Staples big red button. I think Silicon Valley needs to have a Staples Big Red button for this kind of protection for consumers, especially high net worth individuals. Is there a way, are you seeing a solution to this, or are you just making a general call out to the Valley?
I'm making a general call out to the Valley. I think they're really ignoring a lot of the more senior, more experienced people entering into Silicon Valley, helping to solve this problem. I mean, if you think about it, if you look at the Nobel Prize winners, who are the brightest people in the world, the average age of a Nobel Prize winner is not 30, it's 45.
Right.
If you think about Steve Jobs, he was well into his 40s, came up with all these great innovations. And if you really want to go back to the founding fathers, you can look at Benjamin Franklin. He was 70. He co-authored the Declaration of Independence.
Right.
So there's tons of background and experience out there that could really help focus financial tech firms on the needs of seniors in terms of protecting themselves against cyber attacks.
When you were doing this article and you were doing your research and you were looking at the Morgan Stanley IPP, did you see anything or find any apps that maybe stood out that might be a lower barrier to entry for people who are not so computer literate?
Well, there are a lot of apps out there. There's no question about it. And they are friendly. The problem is that the older demographic is not as computer astute.
Mm-hmm.
And so those applications are difficult, not so much in California and New York, but if you go to the middle of the country,
right,
you'll find a lot of seniors that are visually impaired. They need large print. They're not as computer savvy. They may not even have computers.
That's a great point.
Yeah. And in fact, many of my clients that are in the older demographic are afraid to go online.
They're really afraid
of having their funds stolen.
Do you have that talk with them in your one-on-ones? Do you remind them that protection is important?
Yeah, we talk to them because they really want to make sure that the banks, such as Morgan Stanley, have the protections in place to help protect them. And yes, we do, but nothing's 100%.
Right.
Nothing is foolproof.
Not anymore.
But all the banks, if there's any money that has been, you know, stolen or taken through cyber fraud, the banks have to back that up. They have to come up with those funds to protect the individuals.
George, I really don't have anything to protect mine. Now, I'm not a high net worth individual yet, right? I'm on the cusp. I'm working on it, man. Help me get syndicated and then we'll talk.
But, exactly. There you go. We're going to go big.
But what about you? I mean, do you have anything? I mean, this is a personal, not an endorsement.
Yeah.
This is just, I'm asking your opinion, like what you may utilize.
Well, Jason, this is important. So for example, are you on social media? Are you on LinkedIn? Are you on Facebook?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you're laying out all of your personal information, pictures, information about your activities and your events. And so people that are involved in cyber fraud are watching you.
Mm.
So it's really important that you review your privacy settings.
Mm-hmm.
With Facebook, a while ago, it was just automatic where it wasn't protected.
That's right.
Now there is protections built into it, but you really have to go back to LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter.
Right.
And you have to make sure that all the protections are really in place. So that's really important. And then if at home you have a Wi-Fi system,
yes,
have you protected it? Do you have a password on it?
I have dual. So in my case, yes, I have one that's protected, one that's public.
Good.
I encrypted one that I keep just my family's stuff on. And then when people come to visit the house for dinner parties, they can jack onto my other one.
Exactly. But 50% of the households have not protected their Wi-Fi systems.
That's too high.
So that's really open to anybody on a drive-by observing what you're doing. And what happens is they learn your behavior on the computer. They learn your email address, and then they can send to their financial advisor an email saying, hey, I need $50,000, send it to me. Well, we're all trained not to accept anything in email.
Correct.
We have to talk to the individual, whether we know them or not, we have to talk to them, and we have to ascertain that it is them on the phone.
Right.
So in order to protect people, we have to really go the extra mile in there.
That's good advice. We're going to have links up again, facebook.com/techonomicsradio. I did a story and a segment on this with specifically Facebook privacy settings. So we'll put that link up again.
Good. Very good.
Very good. All right. My last question for you, George, is help my producer, Leanna, understand how the federal interest rate affects her life. Now, I tell her if you're a conservative investor or if you're a saver, you may as well put it in your mattress. You're making the same amount of money as in a savings account. Am I way off on that?
No, you're totally right. If you have your money in a savings account, you're getting a very, very low interest rate. You're getting maybe 5 basis points, which in 1%, there's 100 basis points. So you can imagine what that return is. It's very, very low.
Right.
If you want to get a higher return, you have to take on a little bit more risk. You might move to a money market account.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted a little bit more risk, you might move to a bond. You might move to a stock, but you're taking on risk whenever you do that because, again, it's a low-growth economy, so the returns are going to be low on everything. And if you want a higher return, you have to take on more risk.
Right.
And if you're older, risk isn't good.
Right.
If you're younger, you can take on a little bit more risk.
Yeah, your exposure
to
risk.
But it really does affect her if she's going to be doing something, like if she's going to be buying a car.
Uh-huh.
If you notice last year, we sold more cars than we ever had since the Great Depression.
Right.
And that's because the short-term interest rates are pretty low. You could get a car loan for 1%, 2%, 3%, and that's caused a lot of new car buying.
Right. I hear that they're collateralizing those like they did the mortgages, though.
Well, we hope not. But again, we start to get out of the box a little bit after 2008, so we really need to watch that for sure.
All right.
But, you know, buying a car, buying a house, rates are incredibly low, but you have to have the resources and you have to have the credit to be able to do that.
So when we do see a rate hike, is it going to be 25 basis points or is it going to be 50?
It's going to be very cautious. It's probably going to be very low, 25 basis points, which does not affect the long-term rate at all.
Okay.
If you raise the federal fund rate at 1%, it increases the long-term rate, the 30-year mortgage, by about 0.25%.
There we go. That's the math I was wondering
about.
Okay. Thanks a lot, George. We're speaking with George Nocetti, a wealth management expert.
Well, that's nice of you to say that. I appreciate that. My clients will appreciate hearing that also.
Thank you. At Morgan Stanley over in Walnut Creek. George, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
That was George Nocetti. He's a wealth management expert at Morgan Stanley. He's based in Walnut Creek, California. For more on the recent research they did into cybersecurity fears, financial tech, and baby boomers, check out the link on Facebook.com/Techonomics Radio. Just ahead, after this short break, we have an author and analyst who dissects disruptive technology. He's also a consultant, and often, when executives see him coming, they're not so welcoming. We'll have more on Cutthroat Tech on Techonomics. Come on back